Hello?
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 Hi?
So I don't think Dave's on the call yet.
Alrighty.
Yeah, apparently not.
So that's just us chickens.
So I'll say hi to you other chicks. My name is Terry.
Hi, Terry. My name is Harvey. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Harvey, it's Pat.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Funny meeting you here.
That's right. Pat is not meeting like this.
There you go.
So, Harvey, where are you from?
Right now, I'm in Baltimore. I just moved here from about 14 years in Atlanta, and I grew up in Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
Ah, East Coast.
Yep, East Coaster. And you?
I'm in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is Pat. I'm also in Denver, actually Evergreen.
Oh, awesome. Did you say Pat or Pam?
Pat, with a T.
Oh. Yep. Well, hello, Pat.
Hello. Your name
enjoying
is...
this lovely warm weather.
Oh, for crying out loud, this is crazy, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yep.
Hi, Carolyn Brooks just joined.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hello.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hello.
So there are four of us on the phone now? Is that the...
I think so.
Yes, move.
All right.
Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave Krueger. Welcome to...
Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Hey,
hello.
Thanks. Welcome to Influence Psychology, Persuasion Science, and Neuromarketing. I think we'll have a really productive time. I have some information that I think will really enhance your practices and move you toward some massive success strategies. First, I would like... I didn't get the roster until the time that I sent the email to you, and I usually like to have a little bit more lead time and preparation. Here's what you would have received, and a question I want you to think about right now, and let's spend just a few minutes. Two questions. If we were to sit down right now, face-to-face, what's the most important question that you have about this topic? And second question, if you were to walk away 4 weeks from now, saying this is one of the best seminar series you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? So either or both questions, I'm interested because it helps me get an idea of what you'll be looking for and hoping for and the kind of things that that you bring to the table here. So either question. Most important question, what you'd like to walk away with?
This is Harvey Steele.
Welcome, Harvey. Thank you.
I would just like to be able to use whatever I learned from this four-week series to dramatically increase my conversions or my closing rate in the people that I'm doing sample sessions with to get them to be my clients.
Okay. Okay. I will definitely keep that in mind, and I think that's something that we can definitely work on. And I'm going to give you some practical aspects of that too. That who is your CTA trainer, Harvey?
Crystal and Ryan.
Okay. Okay, great. Are you currently in training with her?
We're just finishing up now. We finished up the classes, and we're just completing our last requirements to get our class certified.
Okay, terrific. All right, let's go for the record here. What's your conversion rate right now?
Right now, I haven't converted any. I've done 25 sample sessions. The first, the first four were just like friends and things like that.
Right.
And then I kind of got behind the eight ball in getting my sample sessions done. So I approached a few people saying I'm looking to get sample sessions done, to meet a requirement for a class. I need to have so many hours of consultations, that kind of thing. But so far, I have not been able to get, I have barter arrangements set up, but I haven't gotten one paying client yet.
Okay, is that going to get you certification?
I believe the barter arrangements will. That's my understanding in talking with Crystal.
Okay, so we're okay. We don't have an emergency here because there are some...
No. I believe I've spoken with Crystal, and I believe if I have legitimate barter arrangements set up, I will be covered for my course requirements.
There are many different kinds of currency, and that's one of them. All right, so that's great. Thank you. Thank you, Harvey. Other responses to either of those two questions? Most important question I'd like to walk away with. Anyone else?
Hi, this is Carolyn Brooks, and I became certified through courses with Jackie Black about 6 years ago, and I had a great conversion rate that everyone I did sample sessions with hired me. Which is kind of unbelievable. However, before everyone's too terribly excited or envious, since that, it seems I always have two active paying clients, and my goal is to have 10 and to always have some in the pipeline.
Okay.
So what I'd really love to come away with is how to actively ignite my business.
Okay, how many sample sessions a month are you doing?
Right now?
Yes.
Like one or two, and I close those. But I need more, so I need to be getting more samples.
Okay, so the obvious answer is with a success rate like that, you just need to do more sample sessions.
Right,
Is there something I'm missing that you're not doing more sample sessions if you want more clients?
No, except I guess I'm at a loss of where to find those people now. I sort of feel like my well dried up, and so I need to dig deeper, and I wanted some inspiration and to get back into the marketing aspect of my business more.
Okay. Let me respond immediately to you before even getting into the material, because I think there's something that might be helpful to you. In looking at a niche, the usual way of thinking about it is, what are you most passionate about? Who would you like to work with every day? What levels of expertise do you have? Another is, what's your lowest hanging fruit? Who do you already have connections with who may be a gatekeeper to a portal of people who you might want to work with? If, for example, your niche is working, for example, with, midlife women with adult-onset diabetes, then your portals would be certain healthcare providers, people who are in a gatekeeper capacity to let them know exactly what you're doing so that they'll be able to refer to you. So here's what I would recommend for you right now, Carolyn. Schedule a brainstorming session with yourself, a time that you set aside at least 30 minutes that you are not interrupted. You get in a state of mind of just a free flow, get really grounded and centered so that you can brainstorm and write down all the people you know from every aspect of your life. You know, business, church, organizations, friends, you know, everybody you know in every way, not limited geographically, because you can work with anybody in the world. You work by telephone. I mean, Jackie is in
right.
Central America now, and she's doing great. So you can work with anybody in the world. Now, write down all the people you know. You should be able to come up with about 250 names. It's been said that about 250 people will come to our wedding or funeral, you know, that you know 250 people. So schedule a second brainstorming session with yourself and cluster those into 10 to 12 to 15 people that you send letters of announcement or letters about your practice to, and you cluster them so you can do follow-up by telephone. Do your magic that you did a one-to-one. So you're great once you get somebody in the pipeline, but do it, cluster it so that you can do that follow-up and do the sample sessions with them and do that follow-up by telephone and do it by hard copy, letterhead, not email, with a business card and do a follow-up. And especially for those who are gatekeepers, people who have access to a number of people, if they're in your area, they may be worth taking to lunch to be sure that they get an idea of exactly who to refer to you and how to do that, and you convey that to them. And we're going to talk about reciprocity in our first seminar. Be sure you ask them what you can do to help them. Does
great,
that make
thank
sense
you.
To you now?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Why I signed up.
Okay, all right, great. Just briefly now, any others answer to those two questions?
Yeah, hi. This is Pat, Major Kurth, and I was in Harvey Steele's class with Crystal and Ryan.
Okay.
And so what I'm looking for is ideas, strategies, and tactics to make my marketing materials and my marketing activities more compelling and more persuasive. As I start to work on things like my websites and my letters and sending out my letters, I want them to be persuasive, and I understand, you know, it's got to be from that.
Okay.
The client.
Well, you came to the right place. Let me tell you my experience. I'm doing this under the umbrella of CTA, and I've done this a couple of times under my own umbrella, Mentor Path, and I call it a little bit different, but it's a similar kind of presentation. I realized the first few times that I do something like this, a teleseminar series, a few times to get feedback and to kind of look at refining and add material and get some responses from people and see what really meets needs, and then convert it to like a webinar or like a you know CD series with a workbook. And I realized after doing this for about three or four times that I wasn't applying the principles that I was talking about, because I did preparation of 2 or 3 years of looking at all the influence psychology, persuasion science, neuromarketing, because it's something that I was intrigued with as part of the mind and brain sciences that is what I do in coaching. And I realized that there was a lot to learn, and I also recognized that I was imparting all this, but I wasn't using it in my marketing. So I revised this the last time I did it, last year, under my own umbrella. I revised it to incorporate all these principles, and I got 8 times the subscription than my best previous one. So I'm here to tell you it works. So that's exactly what we're going to be doing. So think about these questions. Either email me or add them. I'll save some time at the beginning and the end of each class for discussion. And in the middle, I'm going to put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about background noise. But I'm interested in your responses and other ideas about what you most like to address and what you'd really like to walk away with. So other ideas, let me know. And others of you who haven't said, think about it and let me have a response. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and I'll save some time, I think I can, at the end. For us to have a little bit of a discussion. Okay, here's the premise and overview. Practicing professionals in healthcare, law, finance, accounting, business, and coaching are well-educated and trained, but we may have trouble acknowledging that we're also in business. We're able to help others achieve their goals, but we may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for our own practices and businesses. So here's what we'll do together. Innovative work in the mind and brain sciences help us understand more about the topics of our four seminars on the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset mastery, and neuromarketing to apply each to develop your success. I want to show you how each of these four areas can add immensely to your business success, specifically how these brain-based strategies of the persuasion sciences can generate measurable improvement of engagement and sales for your professional services and products. So, as we look at the psychology of influence, I'd like you to look at quiz number one and number two that you had. This is in your outline. I hope you've downloaded and printed your outline. It's a fairly annotated outline, so you don't have to take a lot of notes. First quiz. Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals to examine the major factor that determined whether someone engaged or declined, accepted or refused services from the professional. It was the same in both instances. Was it years of experience, reputation, amount of the fee, degrees and certification, stating recommendations and fee clearly and confidently, state of the economy? It was whether someone stated recommendations and fee clearly and confidently. That confidence was more important than any of these other factors. And think about it, how states of mind are contagious. When you see a professional, you want that professional to be confident, and when that person is confident, you're much more likely to follow their recommendation. Second quiz, Carnegie Mellon did a large study to determine the big factor for professionals earning the trust of others. Look at these four options: established proven expert, confidence of the professional, demonstrated current expertise, and reputation. The answer to both are the same. Stating the recommendations and the fee confidently. Simple, confident explanations trump expertise. Mirror neurons and energy fields resonate with another's emotional state and influences behavior. Confidence is more correlated with success than either competence or expertise. More about this later. So let's first look at influence. Influence is simply to move people to a desired outcome while helping them feel genuinely good about themselves and you. So there are four primary tools of influence that we need to understand. One is the influential story pattern. Why is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they're more innovative than their competition, but they're just another computer and tech products company. They have the same access to the same talent, the same agencies, the same consultants, the same media. So why is it they have phenomenal success while a number of others have done okay or failed? Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only guy who suffered pre-civil rights America, and certainly wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? There's something else at play here. As it turns out, there's a pattern. All the great and inspiring leaders and the organizations in the world, whether it's Apple or Martin Luther King, they think, act, and communicate in the same way. And it happens to be the complete opposite to everyone else. Listen for the pattern. A marketing message from computer companies like Dell, Hewlett-Packard, and others is, we make great computers. They're beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, user-friendly. Want to buy one? Well, that's how most of us communicate, how most of marketing is done. We say what we do, how we're different and better, and then expect people to respond by buying our services or products. But people rarely believe that what we do is as awesome as we believe it is. Now, this is how Apple communicates. Everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. We just happen to make great computers. Want to buy one? Totally different. This reverses the order of communication, not just for computers, but for players, phones, pads. In the summer of 1963, a quarter of a million people showed up on the Mall in Washington to hear Dr. King speak. They sent out no invitations. There was no website to check the date. How do you get 250,000 people to show up? Dr. King didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. And people who believed that he believed took his cause and they made it their own, and they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. 250,000 people showed up the right day, the right time to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. Well, maybe three, if you count his family. They showed up for themselves. It's what they believe about America that got them to travel on a bus for 8 hours and stand in the sun in Washington in the middle of August. It's what they believe, and it wasn't about black versus white. Just over 25% of the audience was white. And he gave the I Have a Dream speech, not the I Have a Plan speech. So, no matter how talented, skilled, experienced, hardworking, and unique you are, unless you're able to influence the ways others think and act, your success will be limited. This does not equate at all with manipulation, but with consistently generating personal and professional satisfaction while making the lives of others considerably better. I've seen some of the most talented and well-trained people in the world with stellar academic backgrounds and exceptional training accomplish average results because they didn't master people and influence skills that truly resonate with someone to engage, to commit. And I've seen people who master those skills soar personally and professionally. This includes my 25 years of practice as a psychoanalyst and a psychiatrist, and my last dozen years as a mentor coach. One key principle is from Dale Carnegie. Ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. That means that for the ultimate influence, we must first ask the question, what's in it for them? The greatest story command is this: make me care, emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically. Make your audience care. To make them care, you need to know what they already most care about. Is it home, status, family, adventure, security, mastery? Their fundamental needs and ideals. The most powerful stories began by placing a core ideal or concern at the center of the challenge that the audience may have never before imagined, but now can't ignore. The value proposition, the purpose. Dr. Robert Maloney, a professor of ophthalmology at UCLA, was the first surgeon in North America to perform LASIK surgery. He had to help his patients overcome their fear of this unknown procedure, which involves cutting a flap in the surface of the eyeball, the cornea. He had to give full disclosure, including negative possibilities, because he was required by law, that could easily discourage people from getting procedures they needed. And all of this was without testimonials of success stories from former patients. He was the first. He listened closely to his patients and discovered that the value proposition they actually cared about most was trust. They didn't want guarantees. They needed reassurance to connect. So Maloney began telling his patients, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to take care of you. Then he'd tell them the story of what he expected would happen with their surgery. He would cover negative information about problems and not have to struggle with, but he would conclude his story with a resolution that satisfied their emotional needs. I'm never giving up on you. Even if there's a problem, we're in this together, walking side by side. His emphasis, his framework, was the story of relationship and connection. His call to action was for his patients to trust him enough to make their leap into uncertainty. Right now, Maloney has personally performed more than 50,000 vision-correcting surgeries. This, I believe, is what my mentor coaching clients need to know from me, that I will believe in you until both of us do, and I will walk side by side with you into and throughout your success, no matter what. So, what's the pattern of influence? Let's deconstruct it. It may be among the world's simplest ideas compressed into three words. What, how, why? These three words explain why some organizations and some leaders are able to inspire and others can't or don't. Every single person and organization on the planet knows what they do. Some know how they do it, whether you call it a differentiating value proposition or a proprietary process, but few people or organizations know why they do what they do. And by why, rather than making a profit, their purpose. What's your cause, your belief? Why does your organization exist? Why do you get out of bed in the morning, and why should anybody care? The inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of their size, industry, or focus, all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Perhaps more important than achieving a goal is who it makes you become to fulfill the goal. So what this tells us is that people don't buy what we do. People buy why we do it. The goal is not to do business with everybody who needs what we have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what we believe. People don't buy what we do. People buy why we do it. The why is your story, your mission. It should be bold, captivating, inspirational. One of my New Life Story Wellness coaches in training asked me a simple question. Dave, tell us your story and mission statement. Well, now, I wasn't prepared to do this. It's an unexpected challenge, but here's how I responded. My story? To live, love, contribute, and play with absolute passion. My mission? To inspire and guide people to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Now, I better be doing this as we speak, or you should ask for your money back. The foundation of influence is based in brain science, and I want to show you how to do this. So, imagine the brain as three circles within each other. Take out a clean sheet of paper and draw three circles inside each other on a piece of paper, like a bullseye. The outer circle is our newest brain, our neocortex, responsible for all of our rational, analytic thought and language. This corresponds with the what level, the reason. The middle circle is the midbrain, which processes perception and attaches meaning. This corresponds with the how. Now, the inner circle is the limbic brain, responsible for feelings and initiates decision-making. This corresponds with the why. Our limbic brains are responsible for all of our feelings, like trust and loyalty, and are responsible for driving all human behavior, all decision-making, even though it doesn't have a capacity for language. In other words, when we communicate from the outside in, people can understand vast amounts of complicated information like features and benefits and facts and figures, but that does not drive behavior. When we communicate from the inside out, we're talking directly to the part of the brain that determines behavior, including purchase decisions. This is where our gut decisions come from. It's not our gut, our upper or lower intestine. It's this internal part of our brain. Then we rationalize it with the outer logical brain. Neuroeconomics labs have shown us that we make purchase decisions, for example, up to 10 seconds before we're actually even consciously aware of it. And we make a decision first at this emotional level, this internal circle. Then we move it to the outer circle to make it make sense and be logical and conscious and light on something that makes it make sense. So marketing and brand loyalty are about emotion, not reason. Bill Knight, founder of and CEO of Nike, said, "You really can't explain much in 60 seconds, but when you show a picture of Michael Jordan, you don't have to. It's that simple." Sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and figures, and they say, "Well, I know what all the information and the details say, but it just doesn't feel right." Now, that verb, feel right, sort of a verb, comes from the part of the brain that controls decision-making, not language, not logic, not reason. So the best somebody can muster is, "Well, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right." Or sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or have a gut feeling. Your heart and soul and gut are not decision-making body parts, but metaphors for that inner circle, the limbic system. It's all happening in our limbic brain. Since people respond to why you do what you do, the need to know why you do what you do is crucial. If you don't know your why, then how will you get people to buy something from you, or more importantly, to be loyal and want to be part of what it is that you do? Our most immediate intuitive response to somebody is based on two things: confidence and connection. Confidence is the perception of someone's strength and capacity to make things happen with abilities and will. It commands our respect. Now, that's the perception of confidence. Confidence is actually a state of mind. And we have many different states of mind, but confidence is a state of mind, and it's this state of mind that's contagious. There's a blog that I have that will elaborate a little bit more. It's called Confidence is a State of Mind. And it's at my website, MentorPath, MENTORPATH.com. And you'll see at the top, I think the last tab is blog. And at the blog, there's an archived set of titles that you can click on. And this one is Confidence is a State of Mind. When people respond to another person, the most important and immediate criteria is warmth. This is the connection, the two things, confidence and connection. I'm talking about connection now. Janine Willis and Alex Todorov of Princeton have found that people make warmth judgments, connection judgments, within a tenth of a second of seeing a new person's face. Now, this makes intuitive sense. When we meet somebody new, we want to figure out their intentions. Amy Cuddy of Harvard did seminal work in this area to find that emotional responses to people who project both strength and warmth are the most effective and influential. So the first rule of telling stories is to give the listener an emotional experience. The heart is always the first responder, meaning the portal of entry is the amygdala in the midbrain. Then it processes. Metaphor and analogy, the most effective ways of doing that, are building blocks to evoke images and activate memory with all of its rich synergy and emotional associations. This brings the listener into the story as co-creator. A story, if broken down into its simplest form, is the connection of cause and effect. Our brains are wired to want and need story. That's exactly how we think. We think in narratives all day long. No matter if it's about buying groceries, our work, our partner, our home, we make up little short stories in our head for every action and conversation. And whenever we hear a story, we relate it to one of our existing experiences. We do this automatically. That's why metaphors work so well with us. We're always busy searching for a similar experience in our brains, and in doing so, activate pain or joy or desire or disgust. Now, think about this fact and its application. Here's the fact. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology have demonstrated how we create ourselves through narrative, our own sense of self. A specific region of the left forebrain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts. This is the brain origin of our sense of self. This interpreter function is the glue that keeps our stories unified to create a cohesive sense of self. These language areas of the left hemisphere draw on memory from the midbrain hippocampal circuits and the planning regions in the orbital frontal cortex. So the application is this. People buy what they identify with. When a product or service resonates with someone's identity, this activates the specific portion of their brain that synthesizes a sense of self, and they buy. This is the biggest determinant of a purchase decision. This is exactly how a neuroeconomics lab can predict exactly what somebody's going to buy. When this part of their brain lights up, they are going to purchase it. If it doesn't, they will not. So, the goal is not just to sell to people who need what you have. The goal is to sell to people who believe what you believe. This is the unstated secret of Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln. This resonates with their core identity, their why. And the mind-brain secret, it's not someone, let me start over. It's not what someone will say in response to communication, but it's what they say to themselves as the result of your communication with them. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change. The direct result of change is due to another factor, self-talk. That is, what a person says to himself or herself after receiving a message. Think about how you more likely recall the comments you made to yourself more than the comments made to you. This is one reason we want to avoid negative measures and messages. So, this was a big first primary tool of influence, the influential story pattern. Second primary tool of influence, defining your story. In a dialectic between emotion and rationality, emotion wins hands down. This is a basic human nature. Our emotional side is like an elephant, and our rational side is like the rider on the top. The rider holds the reins, looks like he's in charge, but if the elephant and rider disagree about which direction to go, guess who picks? 180 pounds versus 12,000 pounds. Slam dunk. The brain needs a story. We have a biology for reciprocation and an innate desire to bond, to connect. Story is an essential element of explanation to bring together and balance the emotional and the rational. Listening to and telling stories ignites the portions of the brain that process meaning. We are information-seeking creatures. So, when data is tucked inside a story, our brains absorb the data connected to the feelings we experience while listening to the story. In other words, the emotion is the elephant, and the data just kind of hitchhikes on it. So, the data becomes irrelevant, but it becomes important because it then gets to the brain of the other person. Stories connect facts and feelings to make information resonant, memorable, and actionable. What that means, story deserves front row center position in professional communication to make ideas easier to understand. Substance and meaning become the two most powerful aspects of an explanation. Facts give stories substance. Stories give facts meaning. If your business is not based on a story, you're not going to have a business. All good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that it would be worth your time. You invite the listener to the campfire of your story. Once upon a time. Storytelling, like life stories. Storytelling has guidelines, not rules. A strong theme always runs through a well-told story. All well-drawn characters have a spine, an inner, dominant, unconscious quest that they're striving for, an itch they can't scratch. Michael Corleone in The Godfather wanted to please his father. Other spines, not all of which lead to someone making good choices, to find the beauty, to prevent harm, to do what's best for my child. In order to engage a client, write a vivid story about your service, product, or brand. Include aspects that would activate different parts of their brain. Action, dialogue, sensory experiences, visual, auditory. Some guidelines for simplification to make ideas easier to understand. And these are just a half dozen guidelines. And these are in your outline. Don't assume what people already know and believe. Listen to their challenges. That way you have something specifically to respond to. You know, one way to answer a question somebody in the line at the airport waiting to board says, what do you do? You know, you can tell them and they'll, you know, move on and you'll never see them again. You might ask, what is your greatest challenge in your life or your business? And they begin to tell you their story, maybe hopefully summarizing it succinctly, and you say, that's exactly what I do. I'm an executive mentor coach, or I'm a wellness coach, or I'm a financial coach. Connect basic ideas to ones that the listener already understands. Use the most simple, basic language possible. Enhance understanding by clarity, brevity, and simplicity. The four rules of good writing, according to the guy who's written the Bible of good writing, The Art of Story, William Zinsser, are the same four principles of good speaking. Clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. The brain learns best in small chunks. Programs or training designed in chunks work best, and the best are those that include time for reflection. And finally, people only change their behavior when they recognize the benefit of doing so for themselves. Concentrate on engaging and prompting insight, then, means more than giving facts, instructions, or models. A couple of examples. Cisco CEO John Chambers didn't communicate to employees, clients, or colleagues about swelling switches and routers. He told a story, a vision of an internet that changes the way we live, work, play, and learn. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't sell coffee and lattes, but the concept of community, his vision of third place between home and office. And listen to how Steve Jobs convinced former Pepsi president John Sculley to become CEO of Apple. They were on a balcony overlooking Central Park in New York City. Jobs simply asked Sculley, you want to sell sugared water all your life, or you want to change the world? Each simple basic story had at its heart the why. Nancy Duarte has studied the craft of storytelling and the dramatic plot structure. She found by analyzing hundreds of the most famous speeches of all time and testing different story structures, she discovered a story pattern at the foundation of the greatest speeches of all time in the world. It's a combination of two simple things. What is, followed by what could be, for several sequences. She grafted this configuration and superimposed the sequence of the patterns of the talks of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, for Steve Jobs' well-known graduation speech, for Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, to name a few. Each fit the same configuration pattern. So here's a way to create that influential story pattern. The context, the preface, is that your story has to be in your own voice. To create a clear and compelling story about your body of work, find a thread of connection with your audience as you craft specific messages from certain situations. It has to be your voice. It has to sound like you saying it to somebody, like you talking, not reading a script. And it has to be genuine, authentic, as if the person is sitting across from you, somebody you know, and you're at a local coffee shop. So, to define your story pattern, there are three components. For any story, there are three components. Challenge, struggle, and resolution. The first part of the story pattern, the challenge. The main point, the what is. Remember, what is followed by what could be. The first thing to do in preparing a presentation or a product or a discussion of what you do is to know the audience and know three things about them. Their deepest needs, their deepest desires, their deepest concerns. From this knowledge, describe a situation as the audience knows it, a what is. And I'm going to apply this to this seminar series in just a minute. You're articulating what they already know and experience. You know their challenge because you've listened to them. This creates a bond of understanding, a common ground between you and the audience, and readies them to hear your ideas for change. After you establish the baseline of what is, introduce your vision, what could be. The gap between the two will activate the audience's brains and therefore their listening mode. For example, I don't know that you saw this landing page, but the first question on my landing page for this seminar series is a what is. Do you have significant skill, expertise, and credentials, but not enough clients? The corresponding bullet below is a what can be. I will help you systematically shape the primary reason people will buy professional services or products from you. The next question, the next bullet, the second bullet, a what is. Do you have difficulty converting people who need your services into paying clients? The corresponding what can be or what could be. I will share with you the mind and brain secrets of successful selling. Once you establish a gap, the rest of the presentation focuses on bridging it. So the second part of the story pattern, the struggle. This is the middle part. This is what you develop. Continue to capture and highlight the contrast between what is and what could be. Perhaps several sequences of what is followed by what could be. The next what is from my landing page, do you lack a system to consistently bring in more clients to your professional practice? This corresponding what could be, the bullets 3 and 4. I will show you the 4 primary tools of influence and the 6 psychological principles of successful persuasion. So as you move back and forth between what is and what could be, the audience will find the latter more and more compelling. So the third part of the story pattern, the resolution, what can be, a powerful ending. The resolution needs a powerful ending. So rather than a burdensome list of to-dos, include a call to action that's inspiring so people won't want to act. Emphasize how much better they and the world will be when they adopt your ideas. Avoid the reasons people fail. Focus on winning success strategies. So these, and we're going to come back to that, and I'm going to specifically apply it. We may not have time this seminar, but about Harvey's question about how to convert ordinary citizens into paying clients and how to end a sample session in a compelling way. There are 3 building blocks of all compelling stories that we've just discussed: challenge, struggle, resolution. The fuel that propels this vehicle, emotion. The best stories lead with the heart, not the mind. Emotional transportation is the complex system of action and reaction that operates within stories to move listeners. The stories that really work transport the listener emotionally. Even in the business context, if you fail to transport the listener emotionally, you'll lose the audience, or you simply won't get a response. Now, we've discussed the first two tools of influence, the story pattern and defining your story. Third primary tool of influence, your body of work. To create a cohesive story about your body of work, you need to create a content map in clear, simple, specific language. What do your followers really need? Always begin with their challenge. Define the specific needs of the people you want to influence with your body of work. Include perhaps the steps they need to address their problem. What's the first problem they need help solving? Once that problem solved, where do they go next? Create a path of steps to help them realize their goal. Create content to help them solve their problem. Services, products, tools. Start small, like blogs, newsletters, podcasts, then perhaps ebooks, teleclasses, coaching, perhaps ultimately mastermind groups, workshops, retreats. Optimize your content map in a clear and compelling manner and develop totally professional promotional materials. Communicate simply and clearly. Again, use clear, simple, specific, descriptive language. The sciences of mind and brain show us how good communication involves these four elements that I've mentioned: clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. This is how language works best in both speaking and writing. When Maurice Sendak wrote his book, Where the Wild Things Are, he worked for 10 years on a book with 338 words. Now, I've been accused of approaching that number per sentence. For example, when he's ready for the action to begin, he says very simply and vividly, "Let the wild rumpus start." Perfectly chosen, crisp, simple, powerful words. Focus your topic clearly organized around your primary message with no more maybe than three subpoints. Competitive advantage requires creating a perception of exceptional differentiation and then accentuating it. When you're successful at accentuating your market uniqueness, the consumer will redefine the competition as less desirable. Consumers are more concerned with not making a bad decision than even with making the best decision. This is loss aversion. We register twice as much pain from losing $100 than the pleasure of gaining $100. So, three crucial questions to consider. What makes you distinct, unique, and memorable? Now, these are in your outline. Second, what is the premium the customer gets by doing business with you? Why should they do business with you more than somebody else, you know, down the list? What is the sense of intimacy with the customer? How can you connect? The fourth primary tool of influence, the mindset and the message. Focus on the experience you deliver. A winning business objective is to create an emotional connection with a consumer so that their emotional decision will align with you. Remember the two components, strength and connection. A story told by Simon Sinek, author of Start With Why, observed that all the signs of panhandlers had a similar message, something like, "I'm needy, please help me." He believed that by changing the homeless person's message, he could change the results. So Simon found a street beggar in New York who's willing to work with him on his experiment. In talking with a woman, he learned that she received an average of $20 to $30 during each of her 8 to 10-hour days. If she got to $30, she considered it a great day. Simon convinced her to change her sign. Instead of focusing on her situation, homeless and hungry, he helped her craft a sign. "If you only give once a month, next time, think of me." The focus was on other person. The results, in 2 hours, she collected $50. When the message shift focused from her needs to focus on the experience of the passerby, the results increased significantly. This emphasizes that the focus needs to be on the person making the decision, your client, not on your needs. The messages we send out are very subtle and often operate on the unconscious level. People are influenced positively or negatively by our messages at an unconscious level. When we send out messages that are about us, the quality of our services and products, where we train, the experience, the various kinds of things that we offer, we're going to receive less response from others. The more we take as point of reference the recipient of the message, the more those recipients will be willing to join in and create mutual fulfillment. Think about the messages you communicate and where the focus is. Rather than beginning with the benefits of what you do or the facts or the figures, begin with the issues of the recipient, the challenges, the pain points, the needs. What will someone pay you money for? They will pay you for what they can't do or be themselves. They won't pay you for how much experience you've had or what credentials or certification you have. So, rather than telling somebody about your experience, credentials, and training, focus on what's in it for them. In 25 years of practicing as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, no patient ever came to work with me because I was named one of the top doctors in America. As a mentor coach, no client has ever come to work with me because I've written 20 books. They don't care, and they shouldn't. They want to know I care about them. They want to know what's in it for them and get the sense that I confidently believe in both of us to do that, that I'm loyally and passionately 100% dedicated to their success. Theodore Roosevelt said it very succinctly. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's been said that there are two things that people don't want to know how they're made: laws and sausage. Now, add this as the third. All of your qualifications and degrees and training and experiences, your client wants to know what's in it for me. Remember that our brains release dopamine, the pleasure chemical, when we anticipate a positive experience, such as just before spending money. This emphasizes the role of hope and anticipation of looking toward a result. So, a very brief review in closing here about your why. The most common difference between the best and everybody else is a compelling reason, commitment, the why. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in that makes a difference. You have to know what you're worth. I believe that when someone works with me in mentor coaching, that it will make a significant difference for the rest of their lives. No strategy replaces integrity and caring to make a difference by connecting with others, to be genuine. Your why describes what you focus on and what you don't. The number one thing about the successful 1% of people, they're compelled by goals and dreams, having a why. People who struggle don't have a reason. 80% of success and influence, we're told, is finding a big enough why. 20% is figuring out how. People have a need to feel a sense of belonging. Before people decide what they think about your message, they decide what they think about you. The drive to affiliate is among our primary needs as humans. A fundamental effectiveness is connection, to be understood, to make a difference for the other person. Now, I love suspense and thriller films. I'm embarrassed to tell you how many times I've watched the Bourne trilogy. But when I watch any film or theater performance, I decide if I continue, if it's worth my time with this question. I don't do it consciously, but it's always there. Is there a central character I connect with, maybe identify with, but primarily just like and care about? If I don't really like anybody or care, I'm gone. It's over early. So, a final highlight about your story. Our brains are hardwired to want to be a member of a group. We buy something when it activates the part of our brains associated with our sense of self. We buy what's consistent with our identities. A brand shares the same impact as we become confident in the predictability and trustworthiness of a brand. Every brand is a story, including history, expectations, promises, and emotions. Your brand is a story. Stories are the more important aspect than facts in changing minds. Passion brands create passionate followers. And finally, your authenticity is crucial. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself, to care. Now, I elaborate a little bit more. I'm operating from the same outline you do. I elaborate a little bit more than I had planned, and unfortunately, there's no time left for discussion. So before you put down your phone and your outline, write down any questions you have and either send them to me, or we'll begin here next time with a discussion and have a chance to have a discussion before we begin the seminar next time. So we will pick up right here next time. Thank you for your energy and input, and I look forward to continuing collaboration. Have a great rest of the week. Bye now.